welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversation, somewhat, about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol.
Alcohol.
Yeah. Calm down. Bikes, alternative transportation, arts, culture, communications. I think the internet gets mentioned here and there. And
that's right.
Some perichoretic Saturnalia.
Well, I was thinking big words and small four-letter ones, too.
That's right.
We're all about the...
Fucking perichoresis, man.
That's right. Yeah, last night I saw Tron Legacy in the cheap theater for the second time, and it was the best. It was so good. I swear the day...
Tron being a four-letter word, is that how you jump to that?
Well, you know, that wasn't intentional, but I'll take it.
Okay.
No, I was just thinking that if there's a way someday that I could ride my bike and leave a big, long trail of light and then have other bicyclists crash into it, if you could have a Tour de France with like little tails, yeah, I guess that's one way to do it. We are here. It's another great week on the Sprocket. We're glad to have you guys joining us. We're here with our friend John Eads. John, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, John prepared not one, not two, not even three, but like 3.5 meals for us, which we just ate in the preceding hour or so. And they were amazing, ranging anywhere from the entirely processed and prepackaged meatballs all the way up to
the best of the best.
Yeah, pasta that was made not even today, but like 2 hours ago or something. Right? When do you think the pasta was actually made?
I don't know.
I'm rolling with our answer.
Okay, yeah. That'll do.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we'll talk a little bit more. You're going to talk to us, John, about food and food systems and budgets and all that stuff. So we'll get to that soon. But before we do that, we should tell you that we have some ways for you to contact us. You can send us your input at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call our listener line. Tell us about your life and all the good things you are up to. And that phone number is 503-847-9774. And really, it's not scary. It's just a voicemail thing. You don't have to worry that somebody's going to pick up the phone because it doesn't ring anywhere. Basically, it just takes your call. So,
and if you have something witty to say, we might put it on the air. That's how Lewis's gardening segment last week was left in our Google Voice.
That's right. Yeah. If you take the time to tell us when it's time to plant your favorite vegetable, we more than likely will pass that on to the rest of the world. So, yeah. Anyways, feel free. Yeah, we've got, a couple more things. There are some folks that wrote to us, actually. Either they wrote to us or I wrote to them and they wrote back. But Zach in Fort Collins, joining the thronging crowd of people in Fort Collins that we all know and love and are affectionate towards. He's going to the Handmade Bike Show in Austin, Texas. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was just this week. It's probably over by now. But there were some great pictures, by the way, on bikeportland.org. A lot of good stuff that was being made down there. Really, really classy bicycles. So if that's your thing, we should put a link up to that so you can see it. Great stuff. But he was talking about maybe calling us up and giving us some updates from the Handmade Bike Show. So if he does that, we didn't get him by this weekend, but if he does it soon, we'll have those on the air. So Zach, we're counting on you, buddy. Cindy in Minnesota, I believe she was the one that sent us, I'm not sure. Yeah. So that was awesome. She
right.
Now I feel all tacky cause I said the amount and that's a bad idea. And then Logan in Portland, Logan's a great guy. He's been a dedicated listener for some time now and he sent us some beer money. So,
thank you, Logan.
Yeah, actually not drinking beer tonight. We'll get to that in a minute, but he was the one that bought what we're drinking tonight. So Logan, you're a good man. I also stopped by his apartment. He sent me his address, and I stopped by after my banking on Friday to drop off a thing. So, Logan, I hope you got that thing. If you didn't, then you only have your trustworthy looking neighbor to blame. But I assume she was a good person who left it outside your apartment door. So, anyways, yeah, drinks. We've got a big bottle of Old Crow. Doing the booty scootin' boogie over there.
Watch your mouth.
So tonight we are all drinking Old Crow Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. It's been made by Old Crow since 1835. Although I'm guessing probably not by the same people. So Anyhow, Old Crow has been treating us well, and we're having it in the little shot glasses with, Brandon, your soapstones, which you got from your
whiskey
mom.
Stones.
Whiskey stones.
Yeah, I had a birthday last month, and that was cool.
Whiskey stones.
And so she got me whiskey stones.
Something I don't want to have. Yeah,
get yours removed as soon as you can.
Right.
Yeah, they are soapstones, which are able to, they don't emit too much of a flavor or anything. So you freeze them, and they're in the shape of little cubes, and we've got one in each shot glass.
Right.
So it keeps your whiskey cold, but if you want to be having it neat. It's the word I learned last week.
Not clean.
Not clean.
Neat.
If you want to have your whiskey neat, but still chilled, this is the way to get heavier cake and eat it.
Yeah. It works out nicely. There's no dilution possible. Yep. Like there's no ice to melt. That's
so thank you, Mom.
Yeah, Mom, you're a good person. Yep. Not my mom. I mean, my mom's a good person too, but your mom.
Mrs. Rhodes.
Mrs. Rhodes, thank you for passing on the soapstones. Does she listen to the show?
I think they do.
Okay.
Here and there.
That means they have heard you cuss.
Well, they are quite used to that.
Okay.
Sir.
Yeah. Well, we should probably pour out some more of that whiskey. Would either of you care to take that responsibility? Thank you, John.
Can do.
I appreciate that. So, on the show coming up in the future, I've been forgetting to talk about the upcoming schedule, upcoming shows for so long. I want to make sure I do that live this time, as opposed to having to patch it in. So. March 6th, we've got Seth Richardson of Metacon Bikes. He's agreed to come in and talk about bicycles and give us his perspective, I think, on bike life in general. March 13th, our good friend David Hetty is going to come in. He was on earlier talking about microwaves and not having a microwave. And so he's actually going to talk about bikes, which I think is probably his primary passion in our areas of interest. But, we're going to have him back on to talk about that. March 20th, Josh the Bike Plumber of St. Francis Plumbing. If you read bikeportland.org on a regular basis, you know that Josh is the guy who carries all of his tools around on a long tail bike. And so he's going to come in and tell us about that experience. March 27th, Michael Parzali. I'm not sure how you say his last name, honestly, but he'll tell us about his name pronunciation, as well as
it's gonna be a very short episode.
That's right. As well as he's a representative of Grease Bus, which is a little company here in town that my wife took not too long ago, a couple weekends back, up to Mount Hood to go skiing. And the bus runs on vegetable oil as opposed to diesel or biodiesel or gasoline or anything else. They used reclaimed materials to put all that in motion. So he's going to tell us a little bit more about that. But that's the folks that are coming up. So we're looking forward to those people. But today we found some stuff on the internet. So
yes, we did. quite a few things here. Let's start off with the New York Times article that our friend Mark Parrish forwarded to us about the retired police officer growing her own tobacco in her backyard.
That's right. Yeah, she's and. I must say, she's a weathered-looking woman. She probably saw some a lot of things happening. The picture in the New York Times made her appear to be maybe the prototypical smoker. I don't know, like just wrinkly. But she's awesome nonetheless because she has she's been growing tobacco in her backyard. And New York has been having issues about tobacco for some time. They've been working on trying to figure out, can they ban it completely? Can you get people to stop smoking in the city altogether? Despite that, she's been growing her own tobacco and putting it all together. So that's a fascinating story. So we'll put a link up to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So next one, we've got a bite from the Bike Trailer blog. Somebody moving from house to house in Kentucky.
Kentucky?
That's a lumpy state.
That's right.
By bicycle.
Yeah, that was an impressive photo gallery. They had a couple shots of people. I think they had one where all the people were lined up, and it was probably 15 or more folks all lined up with various trailers. And
There's volunteer brigades here in Portland that do similar work.
That's right.
It's exciting stuff. And you've moved by bike as well.
I actually have a terrible story. I shouldn't.
We got it.
Now
we should get that brigade on the show, man.
We should. Awesome. Well, we should look for those guys.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So next one from the Oregonian. The TriMet bus routes, this is awesome, this animation. Looks like an anthill. It's one day's route.
Yeah.
In 2 minutes. Mm-hmm.
All the bus routes in Portland.
Wow.
Running
their
GPSs
routes. On them and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they just took the GPS data, I believe, from all the buses, and they compressed it all down to 2 minutes, and they run it through looking as though it's, you know, as though it's kind of like a computer system or something.
You can watch those outlying routes come mm-hmm. in and such.
Yeah. That was the most fascinating part, like the one that goes down to like Clackamas.
Where'd that come from?
Clackamas Community College and all that, you know, and it just way out there. But then it all comes down to the central part. And yeah, that's pretty amazing. So anyways, if you want to see something cool, check that out.
That's great. All right, next story, also from the Oregonian. Bus driver refuses to drive bus after driver's seat is smeared with feces.
That's right, yeah. Well, that was really, it was kind of a tragic story, I think, as far as having to deal with things on the bus. Everyone knows that public transit is not like your own car. Like, you've got other people, and they're not always people that you want to hang out with. But the folks, apparently... that were on this particular bus were upset with the driver, or maybe they just thought it would be funny, like to take a bag full of dog poop and put it all over his seat. So he refused to drive it. He called in and they asked him if he'd be willing to drive it back, and he said, "No, man, there's poop on the seat." So, anyways. That interesting. I think they've probably found the people. They've got security footage of who did it. So I think they may be looking for that
mystery shitter,
smug 13-year-old. Yeah,
that's right. Very proud. Made the next story is from Bike Portland. As bicycle ridership increases, road accident numbers go down across the board.
Across the board, yeah. And I think basically the assertion was, and I'm not sure if this is just an assertion or if there's hard facts to prove it, but I think they were saying that the idea is people go on bikes, people are taking more trips by bike. That takes a lot of people off the road, which means there are fewer vehicles with lots of metal as a part of their carriage to be smashing into things. So, yeah, it's a good idea. Anyways, I was kind of excited about that.
Yeah, no kidding. So, let's see. Next one we've got is GoBicycleTouring.info has an article about a newlywed couple that's planning to bike through all 50 U.S. states.
Yeah.
How are they going to get to Hawaii?
That's a good question. I would assume they're not going to bike there. But.
No. Well, yeah. Cool. That's great. We wish them all the best of luck.
We certainly do.
Yeah. So, Filmed by Bike is happening April 15th through 17th. It's $8 per show or $25 weekend pass. This has been going on for some time in Portland, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I think it's only getting more and more professional and more organized as it goes along. But people lining up outside the Clinton Street Theater. If you're anywhere near Portland or if you're just planning on coming to Portland for a little bit, you know, you got to check out the Bicycle Film Festival. They actually feature as one of the – they got a full roster, I think, on their website of all the films. They have one feature-length film, I believe, that they're going to be showing. Most of the ones in the past have been, like, you know, shorts or maybe 15 minutes in length or something like that. But I think they have at least one full-length film. So, and
anything filmed from unicycles or tricycles allowed?
I would assume, yeah. Probably anyone who's using any sort of wheel.
Human-powered wheelbase.
Exactly. Cool. So, yeah, they got it coming up. You got to check that out. So, that's pretty much what we found on the internet, yeah. So, from here, we should move to our conversation with John and maybe a recap of the meal that we just had. But first of all, Mr. John Eads, you should tell us who you are, where you came from, and what it is that you do on a normal basis.
What's your deal, man?
What is your deal?
My name is John, and... I micromanage for a living. No, I'm one of the coveted food cart owners in the city of Portland.
Yeah, and Portland has quite the scene.
It's the scene.
There's an explosion of food carts, but you got in kind of on, I would say, the trailing end? Not the trailing end, it's the
leading.
The leading, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah. But you know, at the same time, when I started 3 years ago, April... And there were 250 or so food carts in the city, and now there's like 530. So you know,
530.
Yeah, so it's doubled. It's doubled.
Some shutting down too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's always a percentage of people coming in and out, but after 3 years, it's doubled. But you know, I still was the 248th person to join the venture. So you know.
Right.
I was in the middle edge, not the leading, not the following.
Like a donut in the middle.
Right.
Right,
exactly.
In the middle of the parabola.
So I started a food cart downtown and have since sold it to a good friend, and now am running a food cart at 12th and Hawthorne Southeast called Pyro Pizza.
Yeah.
We do Italian-style wood-fired pizza. And unfortunately, you know, as all these things go, I don't make pizza as much as I would like to. Like I said, I micromanage.
Right.
So
you got a lot of people making pizzas for you at this point.
But. Yeah, you know, an article just came out in the Portland Monthly, and it said, you know, pay your money and then John Eads will make your pizza for you, which, you know, on any given day is probably not the truth.
John Eads or his proxy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You might catch John Eads in the cart making pizza, which is what he loves to do. We should make t-shirts. We should make t-shirts for everyone, including our, you know, our female workers. I am John Eads.
Right, right.
Just, you know, so people feel comfortable with this.
That'd be good.
This concept that John Eads is going to make their pizza for them.
And the cart that you have is an open air sort of cart. I mean, it's covered, but it has open windows that you'll tilt out. And the pizza oven, which burns wood, is one that you built yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is no small feat in and of itself.
No, it's a ton and a half.
That's something else. You had to rent the equivalent of a dump truck, right, to move it from.
That's correct. Yeah, we had the flatbed trailer built by an unnamed trailer builder here in the neighborhood, and they made some gross miscalculations on the weight of the oven, and so the tongue weight was over 3,000 pounds. So we had to rent a dump truck. And we bent a 4x8 solid steel tongue, getting it to the cart row.
I'm not sure if that's impressive or just sad, but
yeah, but it's somewhere
deeply
in there.
Both, like war.
Quite the story, yeah, for sure, yeah.
So somewhere in there, yeah, I decided that I was not going to sell the cart anywhere but the location that is currently sitting. So if anyone wants to purchase the cart,
it's got to go with that location
as is. Yeah, yeah. As is. Yeah.
That's pretty great.
We will not be moving it short of, you know, disaster. So.
Yeah.
So like, that's what I do on a normal basis.
And your pizzas are absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
At one point when I was living in your in-law's house, actually I was living in the yard in an RV, which is a story
down by the river?
Close.
City diet of government cheese.
Down by the creek. But... anyways, you and I lived kind of on the same plot for a while,
right.
And I remember you would always bring home the pizza that you made, and I would always eat it at about 2 a.m. So
yeah.
that was a nice arrangement. I miss those days, but I understand that, you know, things have to change. So,
right.
Yeah, I think our lives are all better now than they were. So
I mean, we're getting older. You know, you can't put on those kind of calories. We're going to be talking about calories tonight. You know, you can't consume the kind of calories you could have years ago.
Yeah. Well, speaking of calories, you should tell us about what you just did.
And what brought you to do that?
Right. So. It all started actually with the Newsweek article, let's see, and this is dated November of 2010, which I didn't realize it was so long ago. But I was excited to see the article, but sort of pissed off at the same time once I read the article, because I feel like they got a few things, you know, as these sort of things have to do, they have to take a pretty fine stance.
Sure.
On,
what's the name of the article?
The article is "The Dinner Divide: How Our Foodie Obsession Is Driving Americans Apart," and they presented the story of three different families: a wealthy family, a single mom with a few kids, and an older man with a few family members living with him. And essentially, the premise of the article is that. Well, here's their own words. As more of us indulge our passion for local organic delicacies, the growing number of Americans don't have enough nutritious food to eat. How we can bridge the gap? How can we bridge the gap? And saying that the dinner meal is now becoming a definitive marker of social status.
Kind of like your house used to. Or like
right.
The ties that you
wear.
Yeah.
They say that, you know, it used to be other things kind of defining...
A nice watch.
Yeah. But, you know, now with kind of our emphasis with, you know, Poland's book on Omnivore's Dilemma and emphasis on local, you know, especially in the Portland scene, you see a lot of this, not maybe not so much in the Midwest, but you see a lot of this on the fringes of our country, especially people making an emphasis for local, organic, natural, sustainable, all these crazy buzzwords.
Yeah. Oregon and Vermont.
Yeah, right, exactly. Is that leaving people out?
It's making like class lines sort of also rooted in ethics, which makes it awkward.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the wealthy, well, they say, though they are not wealthy by standards of their neighbors, this family of four with a mom, a dad, and two kids that appear to be like 10 and 8 spend over $1,000 a month on groceries, 20% of their income. The average American spends 13% of their income. That includes going out to eat.
Right.
So, the, you know, this family spending $1,000 a month in groceries. And so my first thing is like, what the hell are they buying? Like, I mean, $1,000 a month, I could have almost everything imported from France.
Right, right.
For $1,000 a month.
Even the water, which
yeah.
admittedly is good there.
But. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So, that was my – and then I started asking other, you know, friends, family – neighbors, people at the cart, like, what do you spend a month? You know, this is what do we spend is a faux pas topic in American psyche. You know,
sure.
what do you make? What do you spend? But, you know, yeah. people were pretty willing to like spout out what they spent. And yeah, people were pretty like amazed to think what these people, and you know, they go on to say it's all lattes and, you know, French,
right.
French hippie cheese.
I do like myself a good camembert every now and again.
But, yeah.
But I guess if you're going to have that all the time, it's maybe a little bit more expensive than you ought, perhaps on a regular basis.
Yes. The label of the cheese they have for breakfast, the subtext is the hippest cheese in New York. It's a Dutch cheese.
Really? It's yes. That says that on the label?
Yeah, it says that on the label.
Well, so that almost immediately disqualifies it from being true. But, I mean, sure.
So,
how
yeah.
How insecure are they, man?
I don't know.
Right. So,
I'm a secure cheesemaker.
So right. It got me thinking, like, you know, food, this kind of topic has been really grating on my mind for the last couple of years. So to speak. So to speak, yeah. Grinding into my soul.
With stale parmesan.
So I thought, well, okay, I'm just going to pick a common menu. I'm just going to pull some things out of the air that, you know, that the average American might consume in the day. And I'm going to go to the cheapest grocery store in town. And I'm going to buy that set menu as cheaply as I possibly can. And then I'm going to go to kind of a middle, well, okay, then I'm going to go to the most expensive grocery store that I'm aware of in town and buy the nicest, fanciest, most expensive things I can get my hands on.
Of those same items. So say,
yeah, those same.
If it's green beans, cheap, I'll get.
Right.
Bougie.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily trying to compare, like, where's the cheapest green beans in town? That's not what I'm going for. I'm going for, like. Yeah, I'm going for what I can get in the green bean department at the cheap grocery and what I can get in the green bean department at the expensive grocery. And then the middle ground was kind of like trying to follow my wife and I's ethic about eating and, like, you know, what would we spend on a green bean? And green beans is a good idea because when I first shopped at the cheap grocery, green beans, you know, canned food is canned food, so I just picked green beans. But when right. When I got to the other two groceries, green beans are out of season, so they're very expensive.
Sure.
So I ended up getting beets because beets are in season. They were actually quite cheap. So
and they were pretty good too.
Yeah. So this is kind of like a decision that I had to make along the way of saying,
yeah.
I'm not going to stick with the green beans.
Right.
So I worked up a price per serving, calories, fat, and sodium, which are the big hot topics for these things. And I worked up an entire day worth of food for the cheap, the reasonable, I called it, and the expensive meals. And just really trying to get a gross number on what do people pay for caloric intake. And, you know, I originally thought, like, am I, you know, to look at the other things, like, you know, does this meal provide enough vitamin C? But that was just too much. I mean, I've been out of school for, like, almost 10 years, and, you know, it's too much thinking.
Right,
right. Can't go there.
Too much math.
So I just stuck with the calories, fat, and sodium. And so, oh, and I also did, I decided to buy an 88-cent banquet meal.
Right, right.
And provide it for the consumption of the
banquet
public.
Being a brand name.
Banquet, yes. Banquet yeah. being a brand name.
If you
name.
Couldn't tell by the 88 cents.
Not right. necessarily a descriptive sort of word, yeah. But.
And, yeah, it's like a 5-minute microwave job, but surprisingly it's a 40-minute oven job. So if you're not into the microwave, if you listen to the podcast and you've done away with your microwave, you just as well make your own meatballs because
right.
it's going to take you just as long to put this thing in the oven.
As you were saying, you get to ball
but
them
I can,
up.
But I can go like watch an episode of Modern Family while that's,
yeah,
that's
true. Exactly.
Which you may
exactly.
in fact be interested in. So yeah, right. I can understand that.
So anyway, the, you know, we're going to, I think we're going to throw these statistics up on the
Yeah, we'll put them on the internet so people can see. You, right. You put a lot of work into these spreadsheets, by the way. It's pretty impressive, and it's,
well,
it's broken down just like it would be on the, you know, on the packaging for food or something like that. So,
in addition to the to my love for making pizza, I love grocery shopping. So this kind of, and my son helped me out, being in quotes,
right.
This week. we were
he accompanied you.
We were at the grocery store for 2.5 hours picking out like 4 items this morning.
Yeah, so. And your son Amos, he's the cutest little kid. He he's what, 2? No, 3. Three.
I just turned 3 a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So for the cheap, for the cheapest, and obviously this is not the cheapest someone could eat, but that's what I could provide this meal for, you know, in the cheapest way. You know, obviously you could eat beans and rice and go a lot cheaper. For the cheap person to consume 2,500 calories for their day costs $5.20. For the expensive grocery, the same number of calories costs $23. Right. So you're looking at 5 times the cost, which, you know, brings you back to the article of saying, you know, obviously, if the standard is French hoity-toity food, and, you know, not the French aren't the only ones with hoity-toity
food. Oh, sure. The French are wonderful people.
There's rich people everywhere, to clarify.
Yeah, that's right.
If imported food becomes the standard for quote, quality, then, of course, it leaves people out. But
sure.
But to change the paradigm to say, you know, can we provide this for families, for individuals that are having a hard time? My thing is, I believe pretty strongly that you can.
Which I mean, you made a pretty good case for that, and I should say we'll probably take a break here. We should interject the music, and then we'll come back and talk about how the meal was, because it was great. And before I send the music to your ears, loyal listeners, I should tell you that it's from the fabulous Portland-based Hill Stomp, and they have a unique blend of Buckets and Cans blues. Just released a record called Darker Than Night, and the week this week's song is called Banjo Song Number 1, quite aptly. But they're absolutely amazing. If you find them on YouTube, they've got some pretty incredible stuff. So, Hill Stomp, Banjo Song Number 1. We'll be right back on the other side.
Mississippi River's in my blood, and in my blood there is dust. That dust of who I used to be, for the river swallowed me, for the river is. You know someday years before that water dries, when it's dust, you know I'll wake up. I'm gonna smile and drink another cup. Smile and drink up. Live it up, boy, drink them down. I don't believe love coming around.
are back on the Sprocket Podcast. I am Brock. That is Brandon.
Hey, hey.
And we're here with John Eads of Pyro Pizza. He's going to tell us a little bit about the meal that he prepared just not too scant hours ago, which we consumed with great gusto and vigor.
And merriment.
That's right. So what did you cook, John?
Well, the menu, I did a spaghetti with a red sauce, a chunk o' chicken, side of bread, a vegetable, a salad.
Yeah, it was a good looking plate.
My wife scolded me for not doing dessert. She said dessert is what, you know, this is what Americans look for.
But. And you do make some of the most heavenly desserts I've had, I believe. But at the same time, I mean, you can't be expected because you cooked, what was it, 12 plates full?
Yeah, I actually cooked 16, but you guys 16. Didn't have enough plates. So I did a family of four in three different, four different preparations. So,
yeah.
The cheapest, you know, is iceberg lettuce. So I did iceberg with some cheap ranch dressing.
Very cheap.
A French loaf of bread.
And by French bread, we just mean that it was long and pointy at
right,
the end.
Right.
And French shaped.
Really, really fluffy. You know, I went to a party. This is completely off topic, but so is your podcast.
Of course.
I went to a party one time and was cracking up because this woman had torn off one end of a French loaf. And she was down to the elbow digging out the soft part, leaving the crust. And she had gotten to the other end.
It was like a sleeve of her arm. Like a big cast made of crust.
Right. And I don't know if her intention was to later stuff this with, you know.
With Gruyere, no doubt.
Yeah, right. But yeah, she was mindlessly talking to some friends of hers and dug the entire soft middle out. So, yeah.
That's beautiful.
She probably does not listen to your podcast.
Yeah, let's hope not. We won't identify her if she does.
Right. And then I did a chicken spaghetti, grilled chicken. Yeah, and then some kind of vegetables. So,
yeah.
And I have to say, you know, I'm kind of a food purist, I have to admit, but
you are.
The walking down the aisles of the cheap grocery was quite scary, I have to say.
It's quite, especially if you don't do it a lot. I mean, yeah. I'm at the point of life where I used to live right next to one of those. The same chain that you went to, which we won't identify as well. I'm going to edit that.
Okay.
But I used to live right next to one, and I used to go there all the time, and I was excited because they had all sorts of candy in bulk bins, you know. Yeah. You could get one single Reese's cup if you wanted to for like a nickel.
Yeah, and especially when the idea is
and the nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. But anyways,
when the idea was to get the absolute cheapest thing you could possibly get, that kind of like added an even scarier element to it.
Yeah,
I remember standing in front of the processed American cheese slice aisle because I was trying to price out the lunch, which you'll see on the spreadsheet if you look at that, is a grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup. So I was doing pricing and nutritional content for American cheese slices. And what caught my – I was just scanning for prices. Obviously, the cheapest is the cheapest, you know. So
yeah.
I was scanning the prices, and they were all about $2.50. And then out of the corner of my eye, I catch a dollar and a quarter. And
there's got to be a reason for that.
Yes, exactly. The American cheese – processed cheese food is the proper word they have to use for this because it doesn't have enough milk in it to call cheese.
To be actually be cheese.
Right. So this is
cheese food.
Processed cheese.
Cheese eats.
Cheese food. Right, exactly. This is what cheese consumes.
Canned fish products, potted meat.
But the other one is, in parentheses, imitation cheese. Because it contained no milk at all. It was I think they took the, you know, the polymers. The other stuff is just polymers with a little milk in it to give it flavor, and they just took the milk out and left the polymers.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so I'm not
like
really
vegan cheese, actually.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So you know, it was 10 slices for a dollar, which you know you can make a lot of grilled cheese sandwiches.
I'm not sure
exactly what you're consuming. So the idea, you know, was to look at just purely what you could get away with. Caloric wise and price wise, not taking into account, and this is something that, you know, we didn't even take into account nutrition, you know, the large idea of nutrition. We're just saying, you know, let's assume that it takes 2,500 calories to survive. How's the cheapest way that I can consume that in a delightful way? you know, to get my 2,500 calories. Now, the irony is I was looking online, and the average American consumes over 4,000 calories a day.
Do they really?
Yeah, and over a third of Americans are now considered obese. So, yeah. you know, this is this is one of the issues. Just portion control is one of the issues.
I've actually been working on that myself. I mean, you, Brandon, we talked about this before, I think, but just the idea that I eat way more than I should, just because I like the way that food tastes and feels. I love the texture, you know, as you're eating it. But.
Right. I mean, I'm the same way. Like, food is what I love to do. And I actually, over the last 2 weeks, decided to portion control too. It's funny. I heard you were doing portion control. I was like, hey, I'll do portion control too.
It's the new thing.
And I honestly have lost 10 pounds in the last week just doing portion control.
I was going to say, you actually look just a tad bit trimmer than last time I saw you.
So. I think it was high school the last time I saw under 200. I've been like 205. Yeah. And today I stepped on the scale 195. I'm like, whoa.
That's impressive.
And it really, I'm doing, you know, some exercise stuff with, with some therapy stuff I'm doing, physical therapy stuff I'm doing. But it's mostly portion control. It's like, okay, you eat 3 meals and a snack a day, and you don't eat. I mean, part of my problem is my 3-year-old doesn't finish his plate. So it's like, well, that's food. I don't want to waste
food,
it. I will eat his food too. You know, it's like,
right. And you don't portion that into, like, you don't budget that into your portions.
Right, exactly. So
choosing
now,
your own food.
So now I've been portioning that into, like, okay, I'm going to eat 3/4 of a plate, and then I'm going to eat his plate too, which brings me to a full plate of food.
Right. The downside of that is when, like, if you've got sisters or family, as I think both my wife and I do, that have gotten used to eating your food, and then they kind of expect it to happen when you may not necessarily want that.
Exactly.
But that's
this
for
is mine. It's on my plate still.
Exactly.
So obviously, you know, the cheaper, the quote cheapest meal that we came up with, it came to $5 a day consumption
for those 3 meals plus a snack.
Yeah, 3 meals plus a snack, and that's 2,500 calories.
Can you run through what's in each of those meals that you're trying to get across on each?
Yeah, so the first meal was kind of like some kind of breakfast item, some kind of orange juice item, some kind of milk, some kind of bread. For the cheap meal, I did toaster tarts and Tang. And the other 2 meals, I did like oatmeal, fruit, orange juice, milk. The other is grilled cheese sandwich, tomato soup, and then a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, with the exception of the cheap meal, which got an Uncrustable. You know, those, have you ever had these things or seen these things? You know, stamped
I think
out.
We were just talking about that. It's a
peanut butter and
peanut
jelly
sandwich that's it's just made with a machine. It's kind of not extruded, but just kind of stamped into place.
Yeah, pretty gross. And that was actually kind of expensive.
They do taste good though.
They're 75 cents a piece. So that, you know, that's a huge expense for your day. You probably could get out cheaper with smearing your own peanut
butter.
It's
true. If you're willing to do the work.
Yeah. And then the dinner was, you know, this this chicken tomato sauce pasta thing.
And that's the one that we had tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. So I cooked the dinners in the 3 different preparations, plus the frozen dinner, which was the Banquet brand.
Right, right. And the Banquet brand was that was something else. Yeah. It was funny because I kind of wanted to go kind of ascending the tiers, and so I began with the Banquet meal and the iceberg lettuce and all that, and then I moved up the tiers, I think, as I went, you know, from the prepackaged, like the mechanically prepared food, up to the one that you had made yourself, but was still the cheapest you could find. Mm-hmm. And then the next tier up from that was the local and organic option.
Yeah.
But not necessarily the most expensive.
It's not gourmet, but it's more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and then the final tier was the imported cheeses.
Artisan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, the most expensive, really.
Which obviously, I don't know too many people that consume that kind of meal on a daily basis. But
right.
But that meal did cost that day cost almost $25 a day, which, you know, if you do the math, 25 times 30 is close to 1,000. Yeah. So this brings us to our $1,000 discussion from the beginning of how do you.
And that's just one person.
Yeah, that's one person. How do you spend this kind of money?
And those are the folks that live way up in the West Hills.
Yeah.
We don't know many of them.
Yeah.
Went to a party.
They're welcome to donate to the podcast if they listen
to the
program.
It's true. You're more than welcome
we
to.
We judge your refrigerator. But we love you.
We will take your money.
We'll take your money.
So the couple of things that this didn't take.
We're selling indulgences now.
That's right. Yeah, buy your guilt away.
Right. Exactly. You know, a couple of things that this didn't take into account, obviously, is that I prepared the meals as I had originally set out with. So, you know, I did meat, which is should be considered a luxury. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of places. I mean, a lot of people consider it a luxury. My brother is famous for saying meat is not a spice. Like, everyone just puts meat on everything. Like, meat is like salt, you know.
That's
we
right.
got salt, we got meat. You know?
Right.
So it's
put,
like meat.
Put some meat on it.
Meat is not a spice. And it doesn't take into account, obviously, the quality of the nutrients involved here. Obviously, you know, you can consume 2,500 calories with the Banquet meal. doing it that route.
But, right. Almost all in one serving, right?
Yeah, right. But what do you get from that? Like, what do you, you know, what kind of, you know, other stuff are you getting? And one thing, you know, actually, the calories and the fat actually wasn't as shocking as I thought it would be. In fact, the fattiest meal was the expensive meal, obviously. Ooh. Because it's the richer, like imported cultured butter type.
Fat of the land.
Yeah, that
what
kind
about
of
the thing. Sodium content.
But that's where that's where things really started falling apart. 2,800 sodium for the cheap, 2,300 for the middle line, and 2,500 for the expensive meal. But the frozen dinner clocked in at a 4,900.
Wow.
So and
in the frozen dinner itself,
for like if you were to consume 2,500 calories of banquet meals,
I see
you would be clocking in at almost $5,000. Right. And 2,400 is the most they recommend per daily. So if you're doing processed meals, like fully processed meals on a daily basis,
right?
You're really setting yourself up for. You know, there was a thousand and the frozen dinner, you know, some frozen dinners have like dessert and a vegetable and a whatever. This banquet meal was just about a cup worth of spaghetti noodles.
It's true.
A tiny amount of sauce and some meatballs, like three or four meatballs.
Right. Was I the only one that ate that? I think
I'm afraid, man.
Yeah, it was just you.
And it was
like, I wanted to start like at the very bottom and see how things went. Yeah. And I remember just being very surprised that the meatball. I mean, I enjoyed the taste of it. It's the sort of thing that I have had things like this before. And,
right.
Yeah.
But that cup of food is about 700.
My goodness, I'm glad I didn't have any more of that.
Yeah, wow. And you were even mentioning like after like, man, I'm really thirsty.
It's true.
So, you know, sodium causes high blood pressure, it causes overweight, it causes like all of these issues associated.
Yeah. The tricky thing about that too, I was just thinking, is that, I mean, that's largely, I mean, there are some schools that are working on getting better food content, but if you buy your meals at school, generally, you're eating something along those lines with basically made by the same standards, as well as, I mean, old folks' homes, prisons, and other facilities. Like, all the food is generally about that quality, right?
Yeah.
So,
unfortunately.
Yeah, so that's something to consider, I guess. You know, a lot of that stuff being made and being used.
So I think we've got a couple of problems as we talk about the American food psyche. Availability is one problem, and this is maybe not... Maybe Portlanders are not as aware of the problem as those of us who have lived outside of the Portland metro, but we are very blessed in this area to have availability, if we want it, availability of high-quality food, if we can afford it, if we want it, whatever the premise is. But outside of, you know, outside of the major areas that are, you know, the West Coast being probably the major growing area, and then some... maybe East Coast, maybe some upper Midwest. We really are living in a food desert. America is becoming a food desert. I mean, when we lived in Indiana, we were completely surrounded by crop fields. But they were
monocrop.
Yeah, they were all soybean, and they were all GMO, and they were all going to feed beef in the upper Midwest.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
And you know, you would think that in a place that had such amazing farmland, you would be able to go to the farmer's market, which didn't exist, go to a farmer's market and find truck farmers growing vegetables, but no one was because the money, you know, and now especially with the ethanol production stuff.
Right, because that's all being produced to fuel vehicles.
It's being subsidized by the government.
It's being subsidized by the government. Yeah, and I think I was reading something like 2/3 of corn now goes to ethanol production, which puts a huge demand on the farmland because they were already, I mean, there was always already a massive demand for, you know, for processed meat to take in corn and soy.
Before the ethanol thing kicked in, it was about 3/4 of America's corn, soybean, and grain production goes to livestock feed.
Yeah. And so then you add that now 2/3 of that is going to ethanol production. So I mean, you're putting a massive strain on the American farmland, but then of course it doesn't stop at the border. You know, rainforests are being cut down now to subsidize the lack of you know, corn and soy that's not coming out of the American farmland anymore. It puts pressure on companies like Monsanto to be able to easily market th- things, you know, genetic modifications of crops. And it's just kind of like setting up this game that no one really is aware of how it's all going to end. And it's all happening so fast, no one really takes time to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing what can happen. Just like the machine in motion is pretty difficult to stop. Yeah, a lot of momentum.
So availability is like one of the big problems. Like I feel like that this is a slippery slope. The sand is shifting. We're moving away from, in a lot of the country, we're moving away from it being a common thing for people to go to the farmer's market, to actually know what real food is. I heard some quote from a guy that he was a geneticist, and he was talking about tomatoes, and someone was complaining to him about, you know, this is destroying our food system. And he said something like, your children won't even know what a real tomato tastes like. Like, by the time that they get to discerning age, there won't even be real food available to them. Like, they won't even know what a real tomato is going to taste like, because it's either going to be processed to death, or it's going to be genetically modified to the point where it grows in a snow blizzard in Boston and it tastes like styrofoam. Right. So, you know,
as it has to, I guess, if it's going to grow in a snow blizzard in Boston.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't think it's I don't think the plane is going down necessarily, but we're on a fast track in some ways.
Sure.
And another thing that I feel like I'm passionate about the fast track problem is that when I started college and started like becoming aware of my own, like, oh, I have to feed myself, and started growing the grocery store, I realized that no one I knew how to cook anything. Like,
right.
And
I still don't really. Like, I depend heavily on my housemates to help me make anything palatable.
Put hot sauce on it.
Seriously.
And maybe in the more, like, as I moved into more, quote, liberal circles or the West Coast, I'm finding more and more people that are willing and able to do this kind of stuff. But I'm just amazed at how my generation has completely lost the ability to provide for themselves in any kind of substantive way. And, you know, then you push that out two or three generations. You know, let's, you know, just assume that only 20% of the population loses the ability to do that every year. It doesn't take very many years before.
Like Amos's kids are going
to
be.
It doesn't take too many years before they don't need to grow tomatoes anymore, because no one's going to know what the fuck to do with it.
Exactly. It'd be like the dodo bird of vegetables. they used to have these red things. They were good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People talked about those in books. We don't know what books are.
Right,
but,
exactly.
And then I think a thing that supersedes class is the societal addiction to junk. I mean, this whole soda, coffee, junk food, chip. I mean, when we were living in Evansville, God bless their soul, we started a natural grocery store.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't anything in town. You couldn't go to the normal grocery store and get anything remotely natural, organic. And there was a huge demand, so we opened one up. And I swear, every request that we got was like, can you carry organic chips? Can you carry organic ready-to-eat meals?
Sure, yeah.
Can you carry organic, you know?
Amy's, yeah.
It's like, what do you mean? We're finally providing, quote, food to people, and what they want is kettle chips. And
seriously.
That matches their conscionable standards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's this buying off of, like, yeah, standards, you know. Well, we've got this ideology, but I still want to eat my fucking chips. So.
Exactly. Well, it's the sort of thing that it's like just the convenience factor. It's like you were saying, like, maybe you can't picture a tomato if you're living, like, you know, 100 years from now. We, at this point, can't picture a good meal because we don't almost know what a good meal tastes like. You know, we want to have – I remember when I used to have a job where I was on the road a lot, driving from place to place, I would go to a fast food restaurant and get my favorite little chicken sandwich, and then I would get the chips from the local corner store. And that was my idea of, like, hey, I'm living on the high life, you know. It's good stuff. But it's just funny. Like, we have a really hard time conceiving of that. And when we do decide to make good choices about what we do, it ends up being choices that are kind of stamped out by the machine, just like the little peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are. So, right. Yeah.
I hate the crust. I'm so glad they cut the crust off. So I actually asked.
The flavor is.
I actually asked in thus said cheap grocery store, where are the Crustables? And he said, oh, no, they're Uncrustables. I'm like, oh, sorry. The Uncrustables. I forgot. We're not crusting the sandwiches. We're uncrusting the sandwiches.
They have been uncrusted for
my,
you.
My bad.
That's pretty great.
It's a post-crust universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we can only hope that our kids will still be able to imagine the crust when, yeah, when the future comes around. We were talking a little bit, John, about wanting to... Oh, well, yeah, what can you do?
Chink.
We'll drink that up later. We were talking about making good decisions. Do you have any ideas on what we might do to maybe fire our imaginations a little bit as far as...
Well, I'm not done ranting yet.
Oh, okay.
Let me rant a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bring yourself into a natural segue.
Right. Okay, so the $5.20 a person for a family of four works out to about $20 a day. For a month, works out to right at $600 a month. The USDA food stamps for a family of three is $526, which easily, if you're living this kind of life, eating this kind of food, people are going to like struggle to make the gap, fill the gap from the 500 and whatever to the $600 need.
Sure.
And this gives people the sense that, you know, this is a, quote, struggle. And, you know, I definitely don't want to come off in this podcast of the two things I don't want to come across being like as demeaning on people's food choices, because I make bad food choices too.
Sure.
I love chips and pickles, man. I could eat shit. So it's like, you know, everybody's got their weaknesses, you know. Everybody's got their weaknesses. I can do that kind of stuff, too.
Sit you down with a big bag and a big jar.
But I hopefully, you know, hopefully we can, like, this kind of can spur some thought about what's going on, you know. Because obviously there's some kind of issue going on. We've got some kind of problems going on.
And a lot of families, you know, are just too busy trying to make ends meet that they – it's not that they can't just afford to buy more expensive food. They don't have the time to do anything besides here's the PB&J.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, the affording the time to do it. I mean, I know the times that my wife walks away and goes and does something by herself and I hang out with the kids, man. I couldn't imagine doing a damn thing. Yeah. I can't even get my own shoes on with those two kids screaming and it's like, you know, I know she's going to be back in 20 minutes, you know. There's so many people in our apartment complex that are single parents with two or three kids. It's like, fuck, man, I don't even know how you get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, and so to imagine, like, you know, me, although I was, you know, I pulled out 16 servings in an hour and a half tonight, you know, I couldn't even imagine thinking about doing that in certain situations. So,
and you're a professional too. So.
Well, yeah. Professional, this is the right word to use for me. The Old Crow melted the lacquer off of the corner of your coffee table. I'm sorry.
That's good to know.
It might say something about the Old Crow, and it might say something about your coffee table, but something.
The coffee table is made of lacquered wood, I believe, and the Old Crow, we don't know what that's made of.
Old Crow.
Speaking of ill food choices.
Hey, it's my job to insult what Brock drinks, okay?
Right. Don't take that away from him.
So, in a way, I agree with the idea that people don't have time to provide for themselves the kind of food that we really want people to be eating. But at the same time, I also think that there's some kind of myth involved as well. Like, you know, just like everything else, when you're learning to ride the bicycle, we don't expect you to be the next year's contestant on the Tour de France. You know, people have to build up to learning.
That would be impossible.
Probably. I mean, there's maybe somebody that would. Dave Hetty, isn't he speaking in a couple of weeks?
He's coming up in 2 weeks. He could probably do that.
Right.
He could learn to ride a bike, and then anyways.
but there's simple things you can do. You know, like, okay, let's say you're learning to cook beans. It would be crazy to think about cooking one serving of beans at a time. Like you can cook gallons of the stuff.
Seriously, those things, man. Beans. I remember the first time I tried to cook beans. I realized when I did that, I didn't soak them. You're supposed to soak beans, you know, soften them up. And I was just like, I thought they were like macaroni and cheese from a box. Like you just, you know, take them out of the container, you put them into the pan, you boil
20
them.
20 minutes
up,
later, baby.
I was like, man, they're still crunchy. Yeah, and so I just gave up. But yeah, you're gonna make.
I think that that's a problem with a lot of people. Like, I don't know how to put into place education for people, but
what's the problem with a lot of people, John?
The problem with a lot of people is I don't want to judge people, man.
They don't know shit.
No, it's like people, I mean, I'm included, you know, like you try something, you don't get good results from it, and you walk away from it and say, I can't cook, you know.
It's, sure. It's not gonna... That's what I did today, actually. Yeah. That's a whole other story. So yeah.
There was actually, you might want to cut this, but there was actually a fascinating, while I was cooking upstairs, there was a fascinating thing on NPR, and it was saying that a new study just came out that they would flash logos of fast food companies quickly at people in a way that was subliminal, so fast they couldn't tell what was going on.
It sublimated them.
Yes, and for the people that were watching fast food logos, those people, their heart rate went up, they got anxious, and they wanted to finish tasks quickly. And the conclusion was that these people wanted that they were being driven towards satisfying their needs,
satisfaction.
Instant gratification.
Oh, sure.
These people, what they wanted was instant gratification, and the thing that spurred that, according to the research, was fast food, which is instant gratification. Yeah. You get it quickly, you eat it quickly, it's done quickly, you're on the move again, you know.
And then you're good to go.
Yeah, you're good to go in lots of ways.
I tell you, I ride by on my commute every day. I ride right past a well-known fast food establishment with two golden arches, and they have two large sandwiches that they're famous for that are available for $4. And I can't tell you how many times my heart has leapt just a little bit higher in pace and beat, just because I'm thinking, hey, I could be satisfied right now. I could eat, as opposed to waiting, you know, the next 12 miles it takes me to get back to my house, at which point I will make a cheese sandwich. But
I think your best effort is to just pedal faster,
you know, right.
Past that place.
Well, that'll increase not quite to the threshold of palpitation, but to the point where you have.
I was in a band called Threshold of Palpitation.
That must have been awesome.
It was. Played a double bass.
We upside down. Just thinking that that's the. I don't know where we're going with this, John. You have more good things to say. We should get to those.
I'm a firm believer, with the exception of the extremes, that you shouldn't have to choose between affordable and quality. That these are not two ends of a spectrum.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, with the exception of maybe, you know, you do have some extremes, especially on the low end of poverty, where there obviously is some, you know, some separation between what's reality and what, you know, what they can do.
Yeah.
The dollar and a quarter versus the $2.50 10 pack of quasi cheese.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think there really are people that are living on that line, and they really can't do any different than that. But I think taking into account, you know, availability, assuming it's available and assuming people have the knowledge to use it and assuming that people can curb their consumption of empty calories, I think taking those things into account, it shouldn't be hard to consume the kind of nutrient and quality that you want and need to consume at a reasonable budget. I mean, even looking at the, and this is definitely not to say that we're doing it right and everyone's doing it wrong, but even looking at the,
that's possible,
the cheap meal, it's $5 a person a day.
Right.
And I've talked to many people that live on $2.50 or $3 a day, and they're eating mostly natural, mostly organic, mostly local. They're like living, as close to the earth as they possibly can, and are spending less than this, and are doing that because they're doing things like, you know, cooking ahead of time, you know, doing beans, you know, working on, you know, cooking for themselves. And I know cooking, I know that cooking is a big stumbling block for a lot of people. But it's just like everything else, you know, people take time, they take time to do hobbies, they take time to do, like, we have 24 hours and we buy that time to do certain things. And so you just have to make life choices to say, I'm going to set aside, you know, this amount of time every day to do this life choice or that life choice. You know, some people, you know, you may take an hour long to bike to work than other people take, but that's a life choice you've made for multiple reasons. You can't afford a car, or you want to be fit, or whatever the choice is, but you've decided to take into account that extra hour commute so that you can afford to do these other things.
Well, you know, sometimes we want to. We have sort of the ideological desire to. Okay, yeah, I think I'd like to cook. Maybe you're hearing this and going, yeah, yeah, I'd like to make more of my own meals from whole foods and bulk foods, and you know that'd be a great thing to do. But I don't know how to, and so we remain bashful. So I feel like there's something of a burden, a soft burden perhaps, on those who do know how to cook to be invitational about, like, yeah, not just showing off how good they, how well they can cook, but bringing other people into that process and saying, hey, when you come over for dinner, let's make it together. I'm going to make, make some, yeah, invite your friends that you don't know how, that don't know how to cook. You know they don't know how to cook. So what if they don't know how to cook? We're gonna play together, and that's cool. And so suddenly maybe they can go home, and maybe they can do that. That'd be really cool.
John, you actually did a thing when you lived closer to us where you had us all over, and once a month or so we'd learn how to, what'd you call it, the Joy Lunch Club?
Yeah, the Joy Lunch Club. Yeah, 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 right.
Where we just basically was making something that was affordable and fairly easy to make, but something that you can make ahead of time and then pull out later and be like, hey,
so
it's
we
frozen.
Can fill your freezer up full of burritos, freezer burritos that you made instead of all those Reese's.
Yeah,
right.
You can censor Reese's. That.
Okay, those
and that's
prominent company insert here. Yeah. Well, John, we should probably wrap the episode for tonight. Is there anything else you'd like to slip in before we do?
One other thing, even looking through my own food choices, it's fascinating when you look at the database. You know, there's obvious red flags, and a few of the red flags that I think people are not aware of is breakfast cereals are extremely expensive, juices are expensive. Mm. Like, if you're really trying to pare down your budget, even aside from, you know, making it yourself, mm-hmm, you know, making choices that like, you know, even for myself, looking through the database of the quote choices that I made is like, oh, orange juice, man, if I'm drinking orange juice for breakfast every day, that costs me $1. And, you know, we just bought a 50-piece case of fresh organic oranges for $20 from a co-op in town. And, you know, we've eaten on that for a month. And so for a third or a fourth of the price, we can have a fresh orange, which is probably a lot better for us anyway.
Yeah.
Than the orange juice, we're getting, you know, more nutrients for cheaper. And that's just because we, like, realize that, oh, we, you know, juice is expensive and for breakfast sure. cereal is expensive. And there's a few like red flags that may seem like good deals, but you know, when oats cost you 15 cents a serving and cereal costs you $1.15 a serving,
indeed,
you know, and they really take you about the same amount of time to, you know, even the instant oats, you just boil water and pour it over there and you got oatmeal, you know,
right?
And so I think making some of these choices can be a really simple way. And then, you know, like you said, I think if you've got a friend or family that really loves to cook and you're wanting to move in this direction, man, just bug them to hell and say, I really want to figure out how to do this thing. You know?
Teach me everything you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John, for coming, and we appreciate your time and your passion for food. It's been enlightening and filling up the belly as well. I'm still full, so. Anyhow, you can find us on the internet at thesprocket.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to subscribe by that mechanism. Send us some feedback about the program if you'd like, suggestions for topics, guests, or drinks. Send us your stories about the things that you've heard us talk about, food, bicycles, etc. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Our voicemail line is 503-847-9774. Ryan J. Lane provided our theme music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. We will talk to you soon. Have a good one.
Adios.
See ya.